Hi everyone, Jason here. On May the 14th, Stephen and myself will be appearing with the one and only Mark Lewison at the Pavilion Theatre in Dunleary, Dublin. We're going to be celebrating 60 years of A Hard Day's Night, and we would love you to join us. For tickets, go to paviliontheatre.ie or nothingisrealpod.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Nothing Is Real, a podcast about the Beatles. Everybody thinks they know the Beatles, but how much do we really know? My name is Jason Carty.
My name is Stephen Cockcroft.
And we're live on tape from Christmas.
Yeah.
Hooray! Hooray! We're sitting by the Nothing Is Real fire. What's that you're drinking, Stephen?
It's my mulled wine.
Mulled wine.
On a hot mince pie.
And I've just lit a lovely cigar. It's very relaxing. And, you know, it's live on Christmas Day that we're joining you. And we trust that you've put your families to one side and, you know, are joining us on our annual review of the Beatles. And this time we're looking at 2021, Stephen.
Yes, it doesn't seem hardly a decade since 2020.
And obviously this podcast can be listened to at any time. Maybe you're doing one of those post-Christmas walks, but really Christmas Day is the day to ingest all of this. And once again, I'll start with the question, was it a good year to be a Beatles fan, Stephen?
I think it had highs and lows, but I think every year is a good year to be a Beatles fan.
This was the upper end of the scale, like making a list of all the general headlines of things that have happened this year. There has been a lot of them, and we'll get on to later on how the year has kind of ended with just everybody's talking about the Beatles, which is how it should be. Let's have a little look. I think we should start our review of 2021 by looking at the Beatle who has put out the most new music this year. Let's hear it for Team Ringo Starr.
Team Ringo. We do like Team Ringo.
Well, we do like Team Ringo. And Ringo, this time last year, he had just put out the track Here's to the Nights, which at the end of 2020 was him and, Paul was in the video and it was this big kind of arms around each other song. We were told that Ringo no longer releases albums. He releases EPs, Steve.
Yes, yes. I think that's a good idea. I mean, Ringo has put out as much in terms of studio material this century as Paul, but he doesn't kind of get the credit or he doesn't get the publicity that he might. You know, and I think all those albums are good, solid albums. They have one or two excellent tracks, one or two not so excellent tracks, but generally they're all worth exploring. But I think the EP is a format for Ringo in the 21st century.
I think it's really nice. He's put out two EPs this year. In March, he put out the Zoom In EP, and that had the track Here's to the Nights that came out at the end of last year. That was a five-track EP, Here's to the Nights, Zoom In, Zoom Out, Teach Me to Tango, Waiting for the Tide to Turn, Not Enough Love in the World. Pretty solid EP, actually, I thought, when I listened
very
to it.
Very good, yep.
And then in later in the year, he put out a second EP called Change the World. Just a four-track EP, Let's Change the World, Just That Way, Coming Undone, and Rock Around the Clock. And two of those tracks, Let's Change the World and Rock Around the Clock, got Ringo videos made, which are always entertaining to see.
They were very entertaining. You know, Rock Around the Clock was, you know, a really entertaining video. It was a really fun thing because he's behind the drum kit.
Yes, and you can tell he's behind the drum kit. And the Change the World EP, it got to number 51 in Austria, which is important to know. That's obviously where the fan base is these days. And to be honest with you, I think I paid more attention to them than I have the last Ringo album or two, which is kind of your point exactly. If I get a little four-track burst of Ringo, I'll throw that on Spotify. I'll have a listen. That's great. You know, I don't feel I have to set aside any sitting down or concentration time.
I think that these are perfectly digestible, bite-sized Ringo.
And I think as Beatle fans, we're used to our bite-sized Ringo on any Beatles album. So this is just bite-sized Ringo for the world at large. So, Zoom In and Change the World, two very entertaining Ringo EPs. That's the most new music we've gotten out of any Beatle really this year.
I think so. And what I'd say is, you know, he's 81 years old and he looks great. I mean, he looks great.
Well, you know, money's a great moisturizer, Stephen.
There was a little bit of speculation over on the Facebook page, you know, had he had some work done. But I think the general consensus was no, he hasn't had any work done.
He's definitely dyeing his hair and beard. That's not a crime.
Yes, that's not a crime. That's not a crime.
He's wearing glasses. That covers a couple of sins. That's the Jeff Lynne beauty tip. You know, wear your sunglasses all the time.
Yeah.
But if you look at the two covers for Zoom In and Change the World, he's obviously growing his hair, growing his beard. He's letting it all hang out. You know, he's had a bit of a psychedelic revolution, maybe staying at home in 2021. He turned, as you said, 81 on the 7th of the 7th, which is his birthday. And he did the usual peace and bloody love all around the world, getting all out. But he has some other bits and pieces announced. He has announced not one, but two books this year. So yes. there's the Ringo Rocks 30 Years of the All-Stars book, which I think has been a bit delayed. Is it?
No, I have that book.
You have it all? Pardon
me. I have that book. It came out a while ago. It's a very nice book. It's a coffee table book. It's full of lots and lots and lots and lots of photographs of the All-Star Band over the years, but also little kind of amusing captions from Ringo. It's, you know, there's not much to read in it, but it's a nice kind of glossy coffee table book.
And because, you know, the benefit of doing this podcast on Christmas Day and waiting until we've opened the presents to sit down and chat is that we can get in some last minute bits of news. The second book from Ringo Starr that's been announced, which is coming out next year, is called Lifted.
Yes.
What's that about? It's not a tribute to the Lighthouse family, I don't think. No.
And I mean, in Ireland, of course, lifted means arrested. So you kind of think, you know, has he been arrested?
I haven't been arrested, so I wouldn't know that myself personally.
I'm a lawyer, you know, so I have been arrested. No, I haven't been arrested. This is an odd sounding thing, but it's for charity, so that's all to the good.
Lotus Foundation, that's David Lynch's thing, isn't it?
Yes, I think so. So he describes this as anecdote, or sort of photographs that he has lifted from the internet. Yeah. So, you know, Ringo had put out a couple of photography books himself on the Genesis imprint. Nice people at Genesis, please
send us some stuff. Thank you.
another year goes by without a free Genesis book. But this seems to be, he has taken photographs, presumably in the public domain, Ringo, and just added little captions and anecdotes. And there's a signed version at about $500 that you know, benefits charity, and then a more affordable unsigned version at $59. So okay. I might be tempted by that.
I think it's got a very pleasing kind of cover design. It's nice. And as if to build on the 30 years of the All-Star Band, he's announced that he's touring in 2022, the year of his 82nd birthday.
Is he coming to Ireland?
Apparently not. It all seems to be North American at this point. You know, I'd be there in a heartbeat.
You're saying it's a road trip to North America?
I think it might be, yes. No, I don't know. Geez.
Have you ever, you've seen the All-Star Band?
I saw his one Dublin show, and which was what, 98, I think it was? 97, 98. And I know we've touched upon this before, but I sometimes wish that I had had mobile phones at gigs before the mobile phone era. I wish I had a little 30-second snippet of a Ringo gig or 30-second snippet of one or two other shows, but particularly that Ringo gig, because I know I was there, I know I saw it, but you had to remind me who was on that bill, and the fact that it was Jack Bruce and Peter Frampton and all the rest, that kind of stuff had slipped from my mind.
Yeah, Gary Brooker and Andy Kirk from Free. Do you not remember them playing All Right Now?
I don't, what day is it? Where am I?
You were only 6 or 7 years old. You couldn't be expected.
I was very, very, no, I wasn't very young. I was in college, I think, at the time. But he is touring. And if he does tour again, he's a great night out. He'll do all his hits. And the All-Star Band is this perfect cover where, oh, well, Ringo, you know, he has that core kind of 10 tracks and the other 10 tracks are somebody else.
Yes, he'll do all the hits you want to hear. What Goes On?
I would take a live version of What Goes On.
There you go.
Mind that. There you
I'll buy you that live Ringo album for you.
I would not walk out if that happens. So Ringo Starr, from a you know, activity point of view, 2021, with all the challenges that 2021 has thrown, I think we'd give him a very solid. Are we reviewing this? I don't know, four out of five. What the hell's going on?
Yeah, I'd say 8 out of 10 for Ringo.
Okay, good old Ringo. So who could possibly outstretch Ringo? Is there anybody in the Beatles who this year has put out 3 books, 1 remixed album, 1 remastered album, spoken word appearance, a 6-part TV series, an exhibition at the British Library, numerous articles, and has also underscored supporting all the Beatles stuff? Who are we talking about?
This is the chap that did the interview with Bob Mortimer.
This is the... Yes.
So Paul Whitehouse.
Bob Mortimer's number one interviewee, Paul Macca McCartney, who has amusingly had quite a busy 2021. And when we did this last year, if memory serves, McCartney 3 had come out, and we were predicting whether it was number one or not, because it was about to be announced on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And In the last year, so technically since last Christmas, he started last Christmas Day by entering the charts at number one in the UK, something he has longed for a long, long time.
Yes. Which colour of album made it to number one?
Well, all the colours. I only bought a classic black vinyl. There was definitely a bit of
I bought the red messing. One. There was what we call in the legal circles shenanigans. There was definitely shenanigans going on.
There was hijinks going on. There's a bit of chat online. Billy Bell, friend of the show who follows us on Twitter, has been pushing the notion, and I fully support it, that McCartney 3 is a Christmas album.
Really? Just because it came out at Christmas? This is the, you know, Die Hard being a Christmas film, or?
Well, Die Hard does have Let It Snow and Christmas decorations, yeah, and Christmas trees in it. I don't know. I think because I do associate it with, you know, coming out on the 18th of December last year, getting ready for Christmas. But Long-Tailed Winter Bird, it has a sort of isolationist quality to it, the album, which I think serves for cold winter nights.
I think I can see that. I can see the kind of winter theme. Substituting for Christmas, you know, it's a winter solstice album.
Okay, if you will. I remember the winter solstice. That was 4 days ago, Stephen.
Yes, seems
four
like a lifetime.
Seems
like a lifetime
because now it's Christmas Day. So he started the year at number one, and Paul's Twitter feed very kindly put out a list of all the things he has done, which was quite amusing, I thought, where he says, "Oh, 2021 started with a bang at number one." His first number one album in the UK since Flowers in the Dirt in 1989. Number two.
Did he actually say that? This is my first number one album since 1989.
No, he did not say that.
The actual
Twitter feed
said
Paul's Twitter feed has been kind of going out month by month. Basically, there's been a McCartney activity every month. 2021 started with a bang and a rocking soundtrack, with Paul's latest studio album taking the number one spot in the UK charts and number two in the Billboard Top 100. And although we're joking about all the multicolored details and doohickeys and all the rest, Christmas week is probably, if not the week before Christmas week, are the two biggest selling weeks of the year. So, you know, kudos to, you know, not taking the easy way out and sticking it out in January on a soft week. So McCartney 3 is how he started the year. Ram got a 50th anniversary half-speed vinyl remastered Abbey Road version. Did you buy one of those?
I did. I haven't opened it.
Okay. So
my pension
attest
plan.
For the... Right. You're not expecting a big pension, no? Okay.
No.
So that came out in half. I have to admit, I couldn't really justify the 50-odd quid, so I did not buy a half-speed remastered Ram.
But you'll be holding out for the half-speed remastered Wildlife.
Wildlife. Half-speed remastered. Yes, it is. This month is the 50th anniversary of Wildlife, but that is not coming out on vinyl till next year. And the Concert for Bangladesh album.
You've got your pre-order in for that, have you?
I would buy a copy of Wildlife, yeah. I have a nice vinyl copy of Ram already. I don't have a decent vinyl copy of...
Did you not buy a copy of Wildlife in Dragon Records in Belfast?
I did, but it's very, very old. It's a bit pre-loved, so to speak.
Oh, I see.
I think it was about £3. So that's my excuse. Then as the year progressed, Paul appeared on a set of stamps. That was important. 12 iconic stamps from album covers and studio photography. And then Paul put out three books this year. The first was Linda McCartney's cookbook called Linda's Family Kitchen, which was technically a co-write with Paul, Mary and Stella, with 90 delicious plant-based recipes for the modern day cook.
Well, okay.
We had in July, we got the physical release of something that was released digitally in March, which is the Three Imagined album, which is McCartney Three. I think I initially thought this was going to be an all covers album because we got that amazing, amazing version of The Kiss of Venus by Dominic Fike, which I think is...
I thought you were going to lead with the Idris Elba remix of...
Yeah, geez, Idris Elba. Idris Elba is like some guy just elbowing his way into a picture, you know? He just kind
Idris
of got an in with McCartney.
Idris Elba.
Hey, yeah. I hadn't thought of that. That's true. He's Idris Elba. Maybe that we could change the verb to Idris Elba yourself into a situation just by, you know, star power and proximity.
It must have been last Christmas then that the fabulous Idris Elba interview came out. And we repeated that. Strangely.
Yeah, it was Paul McCartney night on BBC Two last month, and they repeated that as part of it. And I watched it again, and I really thought, oh man, this is like I've seen, you know, more softballs than a play area, you know?
This is, it was shocking. I mean, at one point, I thought, God bless him, Paul started interviewing himself. I mean, you could see that Paul realized just how bad this was going, I think. And he did just start interviewing himself. And
when Idris Elba is kind of grinning at him, talking about condensed milk sandwiches, like some kind of, you know, Tiswas throwback. And Paul's like, yeah, I used to eat condensed milk sandwiches. Yeah, it's not great.
No. He made Chris Farley look like David Frost.
Yes, it was exactly like the Chris. The Chris Farley interview was very reminiscent of what was going on. But the Three Imagined, in the end, it's kind of half remix, half tweaks. But, you know, the first thing we heard of that was the Dominic Fike Kiss of Venus single, which Paul has a little appearance in, which I thought was great.
I thought that was brilliant. I'd never heard of young Dominic before, but very impressed. Yeah.
Can't say I had either. He did do live appearances. Like I thought when I first heard it, this is amazing. This is going to be a massive hit. It was not a massive hit.
Yeah.
And he did appear on, there's a great live performance of the song on James Corden. I know you're allergic, but there's a great live appearance from James Corden. And then when the album itself came out in July, we got the Find My Way video with Beck. And I think that's another great version.
It is a great version. And I have to say, we predicted this. In our review, in our midnight listening to the album, we concluded this sounds like Beck, and obviously McCartney thought so too.
Those guys, he heard us, thought those guys are right. I'm going to call Beck up and get him to tweak this. And if you haven't seen the Find My Way video, it's a Paul AI'd onto the face of a body of a dancer kind of thing. It's interesting.
I thought it looked like the Paul from Beatlemania. I didn't think it looked like from the 70s. I didn't think it looked like Paul particularly.
Yeah, it is. It was a bit kind of, it kind of had that sort of slightly fake look, but I still thought it was nicely done.
It was nicely done. And, you know, it's nice that Paul's turning up in these videos doing little cameos.
Well, he is. Yeah, you do see him walking in the background. Mm. So this guy's dancing down in like a hotel corridor and Paul just goes across the back.
It reminded me of the scene in Yellow Submarine, the cartoon, where they run in and out of doorways.
When nothing's happening. That's true. I hadn't thought of that. There's a couple of nice bits and pieces on the album. I liked Phoebe Bridgers' track. I liked, I thought, what's his name? Josh Homme does a funny lavatory lil. It's not a bad, comp.
I know the Josh Homme track, but otherwise I have not heard it.
Passed you by.
Oh, it passed me by. I mean, if it was a nice video, you know, thank you, Dominic. Thank you, Beck. You know.
Well, I have to admit, like, it's a very expensive piece of double vinyl.
Expensive.
It's like 45 quid.
Very so expensive. Came in how many editions of this, you know?
I don't know. There was only one, I think.
Some recent one pressed up in some different color by Third Man?
That was just the original three. Oh. It was repressed again and as a Third Man. I would say Three Imagined is definitely worth asking your speaker in the kitchen to play it while you're doing something else. An excellent way to pass an hour if you have a speaker in your kitchen, which seems to be the vogue these days.
Computer, play.
If anybody's listening, I wonder, could we set, if somebody was listening to us on a speaker, could we set it off by saying, hey Siri, play Three Imagined by Paul McCartney? And we'll just see what happens with that. That's just a technological experiment. And the other thing that happened in the summer, almost as a precursor to Get Back, was a 6-part series with the very, very serious and worthy, he's made of wood and leather, Rick Rubin.
Yeah, he doesn't own trousers.
Well, you say that, that's like a bad thing. Did you watch McCartney 321 on Disney Plus?
Eventually. Okay. It took me a while because I didn't have Disney Plus, but I knew there was other reasons to be subscribing to Disney Plus that were coming. So I thought I'd better subscribe 6 months early just to make sure it works. I did watch it. It was okay.
It was okay. I find it was nice. I Rick Rubin is someone who, I'm not denying the fact that he's been connected to some great music and all the rest, but you know, sometimes his worthiness is he, you know, he's not.
I can't attest to his qualities as a producer, but he knows how to blow smoke. That's what somebody said. I think it was me.
That sounds right. I thought the show was an entertaining watch. My favorite bits were when he was not talking about Beatles songs. Yes. I really wanted him to talk about McCartney solo stuff. So when he's doing Check My Machine or something like that, I'm like, fantastic, really, really interesting.
Yes, I agree with you. I think this is, shall we say, the trouble with Paul McCartney for me is that he is just becoming increasingly Beatles-centric. I mean, and I know that people want to hear about the Beatles, and I know that there are new people coming up and new generations coming up, but I think it is such a shame that Paul seems now to be closing off areas of his own solo catalog, you know. You know, we'll come on to maybe another example of that. What I would say, we talked at the time, you know, who is this for? Who is this series aimed at? And it's aimed at my nephew.
Oh, tell me more. Why?
10 or 11. And he thinks this is great. He, you know, and my sister was watching it, and he's been watching it, and they've all been watching that other Beatles movie thing that came out that we'll talk about. So I think it is, you know, it's not aimed for boring, cynical old people like me, or to a certain extent, you.
Mm. Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think it is aimed at people that don't have a Beatles podcast.
Yes, and what I found interesting about it was, I was wondering where the show came from, and I do find it amusing that basically, Rubin kind of reeled McCartney in, saying, "I want to talk about you as a musician, you as a bass player." And, you know, McCartney gave him a day, and they recorded most of this in a day. And at the end of the day, McCartney said, "I had quite a good time. Do you want to do some more tomorrow?" And they recorded the guts of a second day. So the whole thing was shot over 2 days and then edited into, you know, 3 hours, you know, 6 half-hour of television. But, you know, it all seems to have been done in the editing room, that, you know, the tapes were sent over to Rubin, and Rubin just captured what he could, and then when he got the chance to a second day, did a second day as well. So maybe part of the reason for that it was more Beatles-centric is that, you know, the Beatles stuff is well catalogued. I'm just purely guessing here, and that maybe McCartney's archive isn't quite as, you know, ready to be moved or transported or looked at. I don't know. That's just a very wild guess. My probably the more obvious answer is that people just prefer the Beatles stories. Well, the final thing I would say is my favorite bit was when Rubin was congratulating Paul on his great bass line for Maxwell's Silver Hammer.
Yes.
Which was played by George. So even all these people don't know the truth.
Yeah. Did Paul know the truth?
No, Paul was like, yeah, I guess that's a pretty good bass line. Paul, like, why should he know?
Yeah, I suppose.
Paul then put out another book, which was Grand Dude's Green Submarine, which had...
You sounded so... Paul put out another book. I was like, another
Grand
book.
Grand Dude. And
did you buy that?
No, I did not buy Grand Dude's Green Submarine.
I bought the first one.
I bought the first one too, and it's very sweet and kind. And the second one passed me by. The second one has Nan Dude in it, which is very exciting. Yes, and it's Grand Dude's Green Submarine. But probably the most important book that he put out, it was all just a warm-up for November 21. 2021, and the release of The Lyrics, the career-spanning book recounting his life through the prism of 154 songs, with Paul Muldoon, the poet. And this is a significant book.
This is a very significant book. I had no great expectations for this book because I thought, you know, we've got many years from now, and I thought this will just be a trot through the same anecdotes, and you know, it won't be that great. But actually, this is a fantastic book. And I mean, weirdly, the least interesting aspect of this book for me are the lyrics, because they're just typed out. You know, I was expecting it to be handwritten,
facsimile,
a bit like the George I Me Mine book, where there's sort of handwritten notes. But the lyrics are actually, you know, I'm not sure why anyone would particularly read the lyrics, but the photographs in this book are spectacular, and quite a lot of the, you know, there's quite a lot of commentary that we've heard before and stories that we've heard before, but there is some new stuff and there are sort of new angles on it. And I would thoroughly recommend this book.
It's been interesting the last couple of weeks to see how prominent it has been in bookshops, you know?
Yes.
That it is a, like, it's about €55 in Dublin bookshops. And it seems to be a significant doorstop of a gift.
Well, it was, Waterstones gave it Book of the Year or something. Yeah. And I mean, clearly it's not the Book of the Year, but it's a fantastic piece of marketing by Waterstones and by Paul McCartney. You know, of course, Waterstones are going to drive people into their shop to buy this book because it's Paul McCartney. It's got all of this publicity. He did a live event at the Festival Hall that we had tickets for. And
well, that's his only live ticketed event this year.
And we had tickets to go.
This is true. We did have tickets to go, but you know,
neither of us could make it. So
That was his public one kind of public appearance. He didn't break out a guitar or sing any songs.
No. And again, I was disappointed by that for the same reason as we were talking about earlier with the Rick Rubin. It was completely focused on the Beatles, and there was, you know, no mention of his solo career, no mention of Linda, who, you know, at least on paper, co-wrote some of these songs with him. It was very strange. And what the aspect of it that I liked was Paul Muldoon, and I would like them to do a Rick Rubin style chat with Paul and Paul Muldoon, you know, in the Rick Rubin role. I think that would be fascinating.
I was sad because I paid for the live stream of that interview, and yeah, it was very Beatles-centric, and it was a pity they didn't, because I think if you look at Paul's lyrics, there is a shift in the 70s where, you know, there's really intensely personal lyrics written for the first time that are mixed in with kind of more nonsensical songs. And then his 21st century music starts to get riddled with these kind of retrospective songs, which I think is interesting. And so that's a thread I would love to have pulled for that. But in conjunction with all of this, there was an exhibition which is running at the British Library until the 13th of March 2022. Who knows? But trying to travel and get to that, travel's all a bit crazy again.
I'm supposed to be in London at the end of February, I think. To see the music of Cream.
Really? It's, my God, that's bookending the COVID era.
Yes, it's Kofi Baker's band. So it's like, you know, going to see Eric Clapton without having to see Eric Clapton.
Which is the way to see Eric Clapton. And amongst all this, Paul's publicity machine got cranked up. He did a very significant interview with David Remnick in The New Yorker, where he called the Rolling Stones just a blues covers band, which made me laugh.
What I would say is, you know, this starts with Paul saying, you know, for 50 years, I've been blamed by the world for breaking up the Beatles. And that became a headline story in the newspapers. It was on BBC News. I was on Five Live talking about this.
Correct. Yes,
it
you were.
It was nuts. I was on Radio Ulster talking about this, which is equally nuts.
I was not asked on any radio shows, but that's fine. That's fine.
That's what we call understandable. But it was, this is a perfect example of Paul, you know, and his mastery of the media. So,
yeah, 100%.
So suddenly, you know, he's got this book coming out, and the next thing he's, Get Back is coming out, and he's suddenly front and center. Then there was some story went whizzing around when the book came out about Paul claimed that he had written A Day in the Life, or had contributed more than 50% of Day in the Life, or some nonsensical story that really didn't seem to have any substance to it. So he's fantastic at manipulating the media, working the media perhaps is better.
It's very impressive. Yeah, he's really gotten around. No live dates or anything this year. No live dates announced. Nothing on the horizon. I'd kind of hoped there was some kind of opening up later in the year that he might do one of those last minute 10 date blitzes through the UK and Ireland, but that was not to be.
You think 10 nights at the Three Arena in Dublin.
He has form for, you know, 6 weeks out, putting tickets out and just doing some, you know, two. He's done that two or three times in the last couple of years.
Can I make a prediction for 2022?
Go on.
I don't think Paul's going to tour again.
Ever.
Ever.
Is that a prediction? I think, I don't know, actually. I think if he does tour again, it'll be massive. I think it'll be like stadiums, massive, massive shows, and that'll be it. The interesting revelation in the New Yorker story was that he wears a hearing aid, which perhaps shouldn't be that unusual, but it was just a kind of a little aside that was left in.
I thought that was apparent when he was being interviewed by Bob Mortimer.
Okay.
I thought, if you wear two hearing aids, it sort of distorts the sound of your own voice to you.
Okay.
And I thought the way he was speaking indicated maybe someone that wasn't used to wearing hearing aids, perhaps. But if he tours, you think big stadiums like an Elton John, 3 year, this is
not
it,
even
goodbye.
A 3 year thing. But I think that, like, if you imagine a scenario, if, you know, in the last month with Get Back, if somebody had said Paul McCartney next year, you know, 40 to 50,000 seater stadiums across Europe, people are hungry to get out. They're hungry to get to gigs, and they're hungry to acknowledge people from Paul's era. Yeah. I think, you know, now is the time.
I mean, I can see that, and I can see the temptation. If he does that, I really hope what he does is one gig a month. You know, that he gives himself time to recover one gig after another. I mean, Dylan is out there touring and is getting rave reviews, and what everybody is saying is his voice is great. Because he's basically been touring forever, and he had an enforced layoff of 15 months. So his voice has benefited from that. You know, I'm not sure that Paul's voice is going to hold up to a tour. Don't get me wrong, I'd like to go and see him again, but I suspect it might be one or two one-off gigs, but no big tour.
Well, we don't have a full eyesight of what the Glastonbury headliners are next year. He was supposed to headline in 2020, and that got postponed. We know that Billie Eilish is one headliner for 2022 if the festival goes ahead, and I think it probably will. Whether he will honour that commitment, we don't know. There was rumours last weekend of a secret Paul McCartney gig in Liverpool, but I have not found any more evidence of that. I don't know whether that was just a bit of nonsense. So let's watch this space. So Paul has had a busy year. Let's put a big tick beside Paul.
Are you scoring him out of 10? You scored
Ringo
out of 10.
What do we score? I think Paul out of 10 has to get a, well, 9.
I think 9 for,
9 is fair enough. John Lennon. The big thing was the Plastic Ono Band reissue, which we knew was coming. We knew last year that this was coming. Happy with it?
Yes, very happy with that. Thought it was very good.
I thought so too.
I'm not the biggest fan of Plastic Ono Band, the album. I think it's an album, I think someone said, was it Eddie Robson said, it's an album I admire rather than love. I think it's an album to be admired. It's got individual tracks that are great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was a revelation. And of course, we got Yoko. So
yeah, we got loads of great Yoko stuff in that box set, which is fantastic. And our one to date YouTube unboxing video is that box set. But I do find,
but it was good. It was a good one. It was a great one.
I made it count.
You made it count.
If you'd like more unboxing videos, like and subscribe. Let us know in the comments below. But I do like the form factor of these boxes. And
you're a great man for a row of neat boxes on a shelf.
A row of neat boxes. I think it's great. And, you know, it's if, you know, it's kind of been confirmed by Sean Lennon that we're going to get this for every album at intervals over the next few years.
I'm waiting for the day when they put out a 12-inch box. And it's going to destroy your equilibrium. Yeah.
No, I think we're three boxes in and it looks great. So we have vague confirmation that more stuff will be coming. The only other big item was that the Imagine movie, the 1972 one, got a bit of a remastering and a reissuing and all the rest. Because Imagine turned 50 in September. But we already had the Imagine box. So I don't think there was anybody else really cared.
The movie sort of passed me by, I have to say.
Yeah. They just sort of did a live streaming kind of Twitter event thing for it.
I think the issue with that is that so much of that footage has been used and reused and repurposed. And that you're watching something and you suddenly think, oh, I've seen that in the video for such and such a thing, or I've seen that in the documentary, or I saw that on classic albums. And it's a little difficult to kind of keep everything in context.
Yeah. And that's kind of it for John Lennon. A thoroughly recommended Plastic Ono Band box set. Marks out of 10?
For the year?
Yeah.
What?
I think 10 out of 10 for the box, but it's really 6 out of 10.
Maybe 6 out of 10
for the year. And then finally, we get to George Harrison.
Yes.
Now, this is our third annual review because we've been doing Nothing Is Real since the late 80s. And the thing that has happened, I think we said at the end of the first one, was, hey, it's the 50th anniversary of All Things Must Pass next year. We might get a box set. Last year, we'd been told right at the end of the year, oh, yeah, there's a box set coming. And we got the, obviously, it was Run of the Mill they put out first, I think, as a teaser track. Or no, they put out All Things Must Pass itself as a teaser track. And finally, eventually, we got the box set in August. We're now 4 months down the line. Stephen, what do you think of the All Things Must Pass box set?
I still like the box set. I like all of the extras. I think the demos are fantastic. I think to hear those cleaned up and presented in a sort of pristine sound quality is worth the price of admission. I'm interested in the sessions. There's a couple of great tracks. The version of Hear Me Lord, for example, where they're working that up, is just spectacular.
Yeah.
I still am not convinced by the remix.
Okay.
I think the remix, when it works, it's great. And when it doesn't, it really detracts from the experience of listening to the album.
Yeah, when I first listened to the remix, I did, distracting is the word. I was just like, oh, I'm not sure. Just as a side point, you know, this month is the 50th anniversary of David Bowie's Hunky Dory, and they've put out this remix of Changes. I don't know if you've heard it.
I did.
It is so bad. I find, disorientating and unpleasant and miserable. That it's just lousy. I wouldn't say All Things Must Pass was that, but I found that there's maybe a little inconsistency across the album that I found difficult to manage.
I think that's it. I think with the Spectre mix, you know, I think the influence of Phil Spector on this album is overstated.
You have said this before, and you've said it for the record, and What George
did, he sequenced it very well, and he puts one of those big bombastic Phil Spector tracks on each of the four sides. And I think, but there is a consistent sound or feel to it, to the whole album. And I think exactly what you're saying, the remix removes that consistency. Where things should be sharp and crisp. So, for example, the rhythm guitars on My Sweet Lord, when that starts on the remix, you kind of think, oh, is the volume down, or is the bass too high, or it's a little subdued or something, where that kind of choppy, massed acoustic guitar is coming. That's a hallmark of what that song is about. So I'm just not convinced still.
Well, Yeah, I did go back to it last week, just kind of in preparation. I was kind of listening to it casually while doing other stuff. And I have to admit, I enjoyed it a lot more than I did during the summer. So maybe it just needs a bit more time. I still think we could have gotten a little bit more than just, you know, one CD of sessions, you know, but
we got gnomes, you know, we got bookmarks, we got.
Well, you did. You went the whole hog. You no, still no regrets. No,
go Uber or go home. That's my.
yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I don't blame you. There was a couple of kind of lyric videos and cartoony videos that came out of the summer for some of the preview tracks like Cosmic Empire and all the rest. But this month we've just gotten a video for My Sweet Lord, a brand new video for the track My Sweet Lord, which, you know, was something we were all expecting to happen. Yeah. What do you think of the brand new video for My Sweet Lord?
This has divided the world.
It's
absolutely divided the world. For, well, one, could I say, apart from one or two people, I don't know anybody in this video, you know,
okay.
Not being a fan of S&M.
SNL. It's called
SNL. Oh, sorry, SNL. Not being a fan of SNL. Not being a fan of SNL. I don't really know all of these people. You know, I know, you know, somebody very famous actress pops up, or, you know, that drummer that used to be in the Beatles, or the guy from the Eagles. They pop up, that's fine. And I have to say, the first time I watched it, I thought, what is going on here? But I thought it was an interesting enough video. And then I watched it a second time and I thought, yeah, this is quite interesting. This is quite funny.
Yeah, yeah.
This is, you know, George has history of doing comic, you know, Cracker Box Palace, and I was really not prepared for the backlash across, you know, all social media, that this is a terrible thing, this is a travesty. What's Danny thinking about? You know, he should bury this somewhere in the garden.
I totally agree. I loved it, and I loved it for a couple of reasons. One is, you know, it would have been easy to hand off a video for My Sweet Lord and it's all done in kind of Indian dioramas and swamis and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, that's really kind of the obvious thing to do. But as you said, I am a bit of a comedy nerd and I do like SNL and all that kind of West Coast comedy stuff. So I was quite happy to see Tim and Eric and Garfunkel and Oates. And I'm a big Fred Armisen fan and Vanessa Bayer and all those guys. It's got Weird Al and Jeff Lynne in the one video. I mean, it was made for me.
It was made for you, yeah. I wasn't going to mention Weird Al, but, you know.
So I liked all those kind of things. And as you say, George loves comedians. Comedians were like his favorite people. And, you know, Eric Idle was involved in his videos and Neil Innes was involved in his videos. And, you know, I believe that Danny Harrison is based a lot of time in LA. When we think of the concert, the George Fest gig that he did, it's kind of the same type of vibe or pool of people. So I think it's got that Harrison DNA in it, modern day twist. And yeah, when you watch it the first time, you are wondering where it's going to go, because it isn't what you expect. You know, the little cartoony videos for All Things Must Pass and for Cosmic Empire, that's kind of what you expected. But the story is that, you know, if you haven't seen it, folks, maybe we should explain. There's a brand new video out for My Sweet Lord, and it has a lot of American comedians in it. And it stars Fred Armisen with Vanessa Bayer, and they're basically looking for something, and they go into a cinema looking for it, and Ringo Starr is there, and Joe Walsh is there. But on the cinema screen is footage of George Harrison. But they keep looking for this thing. And the moral of the video is, you know, you think you're on a quest to find something and it's right in front of your face the whole time. That's the moral that I get out of
it. I think so. And then they get back in the car and kind of, you know, they've given up looking.
Yeah.
Turn on the radio and they find what they're looking for.
You know,
that's the thing. So you stop looking. It's a kind of zen. It's quite a zen thing. And at one point, is it Darren Criss is in the video, and he's helping them look, and then he looks up at the screen and then he kind of sits down and starts watching, and there's a big kind of grin on his face with like, yeah, I've kind of found what's here. So I thought it worked. I thought it was very funny. I'll watch it again. Haters gonna hate, you know.
Yeah, people just can't handle, you know, all the
truth,
things that
man.
Us cool people
can't
like.
Handle the truth, man.
So George Harrison's 2021 marks out of 10.
Well, I've got, I'm looking at the
You're biased,
big,
are you?
I'm not biased. Of course not. I'm looking at the big wooden box sitting in the corner
invested.
Of my room.
You're invested.
I'm invested. Literally, yeah. Quite literally, I'm invested. So I'm gonna say, you know, I was gonna say no. I'm gonna say 8.5 because Paul has a higher strike rate, but
okay.
Yeah.
8.5. Okay, and the album did very well. Top 10 in the UK did all right. All Things Must Pass.
End of part one. Intermission.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
End of intermission. Part two.
Which brings us on cumulatively to the group of the Beatles and what the Beatles 2021 was all about. I can't recall anything significant happening.
Nope,
can
very
you?
Very quiet. Very quiet.
No,
disappointingly
no.
So.
Well, speaking of disappointments, let's talk about the Let It Be box.
The disappointment box.
The disappointment box. Yeah. Now, we have discussed these things already. We've discussed the Let It Be box and the Get Back film and all the rest. So we'll try not to over-egg the pudding, so to speak. But the Let It Be box was the big musical reissue. And
there is no limit to the depth of my disappointment with this box set. I can barely bring myself to listen to it. Mm-hmm. And it's sitting on a shelf behind a very nice Lauren Nero box set. So that I don't even have to look at it. Because it's
I call her Laura Nyro. I thought it was Nyro. Nyro?
It is. I don't know why I said Laura Nyro. Laura Nyro. Yeah.
Potato, potato.
I actually can't even have it in my sight. You know, it's the...
My God. Yeah, it is disappointing. It is what it is. It's the Let It Be box. Whatever. It's...
The disappointment box.
It is the disappointment box, you know. I think... The core of it, which is the Let It Be album itself, I think that's a great remix. I don't think it's ever sounded better. I really like what Giles and Co. have done.
I agree with that. I absolutely agree with that. I think it sounds great. And if I had to do it all over again, I'd just buy the 2-disc version because I think it does sound really good. It's just everything that comes with it is such a letdown.
Now, what's been interesting is to see how... You know, the Let It Be box and the advertising and the release of that came before the Get Back movie.
Yeah.
And obviously these are two parts or two sides of the same coin. It's been interesting to see how they are actually really totally separate projects. But, you know, the Let It Be album has been going up the charts, you know, for the last couple of weeks because of the Let It Be. Because of the Get Back documentary. So it's curious that people are seeing this documentary and then deciding, oh, we better go buy the album and buying that album and putting it back up the charts.
It is odd. You know, they're separate, but they're kind of running in parallel. And I think that's part of the problem is how the one informs the other, forms the content of the other.
Well, the documentary, and we'll come on to the details of the documentary in a sec, but what we do know musically is that the Let It Be box set was kind of a bit of a disappointment. 2 months later, we get the Get Back film, and you realize that there is an insane amount of music that has been demixed, remixed, dehissed, put together. You know, the end of part one of Get Back ends with In the Palace of the King of the Birds, beautiful mixed version of it. And you know, there's other stuff that appears throughout. And you think, well, that music, you know, heaven forbid you'd rip that from a Blu-ray release. But
yeah,
there is mixed versions of this, these songs that are totally edifying and ready to listen to. So it's amazing that the Get Back movie crew weren't talking to the Let It Be box set music crew. That was, seems to be by design in some ways, that the Beatles were just like, you go off and do your movie, and Apple Beatles, we're just going to put out this box set. We know what we're doing.
It's yes. I mean, I think disappointing as the Let It Be box was when it was released, it becomes more disappointing with every passing day. Certainly every as I watched the Get Back documentary, I just was appalled at how much was there that could have gone on the box. And, you know, these are songs that I've heard. One of the very first bootlegs I ever bought back in sort of 78 or 79 for a ridiculous price. It was like 50 quid or something back then, was Sweet Apple Tracks. And you got all of these versions. But with road crew talking over them and cameras beeping and dialogue over the top. And now they're all available in pristine versions, but not available as a standalone audio yet.
Well, enterprising people are going to be able to get it. But it's frustrating. The Get Back movie tie-in book, I don't have that yet. I'm expecting to get it when I open my Christmas Day presents after finishing recording this on Christmas Day.
Yeah. Well, I'll not spoil it for you.
Okay.
But I think you'll enjoy that book.
Good.
It's essentially dialogue. John Harris was involved in that. I think he's done a very good job. I think the photographs are excellent, but I think the dialogue is actually quite revealing. And of course, they tease this out ahead of the documentary, so
yeah,
you got a sense of what was coming, but really no major spoilers in the book. But I think you'll like the book when you're, you know, sitting there with your cheese and port this evening. You'll be able to flick through that, and I think it's a great coffee table book.
I purposely avoided the book because I wanted to kind of see the movie first. And you know, I guess we need to talk about the movie.
Yeah.
Now, we've already done our Get Back special edition, and we were lucky enough to see it in advance. And what I think I would say is that because we saw it in advance, I watched it and thought, is it me or is this just incredible? And I was curious in the gap between seeing it and it actually coming out to see whether, you know, is it just me because I'm a Beatles fan, or is it going to have a massive effect? And it seemed to really have a massive effect.
Yes, yes. I mean, there was a lot of talk. I had exactly the same reaction. I thought, well, you know, are people going to buy into this who aren't hardcore fans? And it does seem to have, you know, the social media was suddenly, you know, awash with people saying, I sat down to watch this with my partner who hates the Beatles or doesn't know anything about the Beatles, and we're completely hooked by this. And, yeah, and he or she is completely hooked by this. And, you know, an example of that is my sister watched it with her husband, neither of whom are particular Beatles fans, but they both just plowed all the way through the 8 hours of it and were completely gripped by it. And I was getting nightly WhatsApp messages saying, you know, who is so-and-so, or what does this mean, or who is that? So even without knowing the story and knowing the background, because I think it's the point that you touched on, this is effectively reality TV. Mm. And this is as much about the relationships and friendships, and there are universal themes in there that play out. It's a drama. Yeah. I don't know if you saw the piece that Dan Revelato wrote and posted recently, just about a week ago on it. If you can find it online, I mean, I put it up into the Facebook group, and he emphasizes this. It's about the personal relationships between the members of the band, and you can enjoy that without knowing the backstory.
Yeah, I've seen other takes that say, you know, you could watch this as a business management video, you could watch it as a, you know, family therapy video. There's a lot going on, but, you know, obviously you know, I live on Beatles Twitter, and it was lovely to see lots of people really enjoying it. But it's been really edifying to see people who would never, you know, this might be their first exposure to any kind of significant Beatles stuff. And I would say that, you know, it is still early days. It's still only a few weeks since it came out. This is going to have a very long after effect. I don't think, I mean, you know, there's been an awful lot of Beatle podcasts about this. Apparently there's other Beatle podcasts, but there's been lots of podcasting about this in the last few weeks. And I think we actually kind of need to take a deep breath, because in a year's time or 2 years' time or 3 years' time, actually that's when Get Back will have a bit more of an oversight about what it means. It is a game changer. And I don't think of anything more significant in my lifetime, apart from the anthology, that has kind of tilted the Beatles' axis quite as much as this.
I think that's right. And anthology was incredibly curated in a way that this wasn't. I'm not saying there weren't editorial decisions and that there's a story being told, and Peter Jackson is a great storyteller as a director. But I think it was as unfiltered as we are going to get, probably, certainly in our lifetime. Well, my lifetime.
Who has the most lifetime left, I wonder? I shouldn't ask that.
I think you're right. I think I would want to have at least kind of, you know, 3-4 months, watch it again, decide, not rush to judgment. We tried to do that in the episode that we did. So I think it does need time to kind of bed in and to process what you're actually seeing and how it impacts the narrative. Was it Chairman Mao in the 60s was asked, what did he think the effect of the French Revolution was? And he said, it's too early to tell. So I think
that's exactly it.
I think it's exactly that.
So. I think it is too early to tell. I think it is a game changer. It will have a long after effect. It certainly, I even said on Twitter, you know, I went listening to the Let It Be album a few weeks afterwards, and I said something on Twitter like, this changes my perception of the album because I'm thinking of happier things related to it. And did you know, Stephen, that tweet got retweeted by the official Beatles Twitter account? I don't like to brag about it.
You've never mentioned that. Not once in the week or so since that happened. Maybe just 2 or 3 times a day.
Highlight of my year. And I apologize that it wasn't the Nothing Is Real account that got tweeted. If I had one job.
You had one job.
Nothing Is Real.
In front of the Apple organization, and you got yourself there instead. This is the launch pad for your solo career. I know where this is going.
I think, see you around the clubs. I think Get Back is sensational. I think it needs time. It needs a bit of distance because it's quite overwhelming. And there's a lot of great music in it that, we can parse out over time. Let's all watch it day by day in January.
That's a real
treat to do. Let's all do that, folks, and get on Twitter and talk about it. So Get Back, I think there's been a lot of people asking us questions about Get Back on SockMed, social media. We will come back to Get Back in the future, but it needs more time and space and thought and all the rest. And, you know, what does it all mean? Before we kind of wrap up some of this stuff, but 2022, what do we have to look forward to? Ringo's going to tour. We've talked about whether we think Paul might tour or not.
Yeah.
We might get a Sometime in New York City box. Might we get another Paul box?
Yes, this is the thing. This is a question that came in. What is the next Macca box? Well, if it's not London Town and Back to the Egg, I'll be very disappointed. Or even Press to Play. I want all three of those, obviously nicely spaced out. And I want them to come in at around £100 each. I don't want £300 boxes. Thank you very much, Paul. One of the people that posed the question was, do we think that the market for the archive series has effectively run out of road, you know, boxes at that price?
Well,
I was in a local record shop at the weekend, and I saw 5 of the Bowie boxes sitting there at £338 sterling, and there didn't seem to be a queue.
I have bought the other Bowie boxes. The last one I picked up for about £150, and it's now sitting, the newest one is sitting in my local record store for €400.
Yep.
And I ain't going near that. I always liked the book form of the early Macca boxes, gorgeous book, bunch of discs, 60 quid. There's no argument with something like that, you know. Yeah, I want. We've said before, London Town, Back to the Egg. Let's wrap it up. That gives us a clean run of albums up until Broad Street,
and we can skip, you know, Broad
the
Street.
Imperial phase. No, I don't want to split Broad Street.
Skip,
I know.
No, we skip Broad Street straight to Press to Play.
There is a huge Nothing Is Real contingent who want Broad Street, Broad Street. Let's do that sometime eventually. I don't know. Are we going to get George stuff next year?
There's Bangladesh, I suppose.
Mm. We've been told, but we've kind of heard hints that there's a Bangladesh
box. There's lots of hints. Well, you know, they must have the full performances, afternoon and evening. And we know there is rehearsal footage because we've seen some of the rehearsal footage. So that must have been filmed, you know, the dress rehearsals and things. So I suspect there is a lot there. The next studio album wouldn't be due until 2023 for Living in the Material World. And I think that's an album that I think would benefit hugely from a tasteful remaster and slight tweaking remix, you know, in the same way that Let It Be has. Yeah.
I actually had Material World on. I was just playing some tracks from it earlier this week, and yeah, a little bit of clarity to it would be fine, and not a big overhaul, but you could give it a bit of punch, and a little bit of a Material World, a bit of punch would be a lovely thing to listen to, you know.
Yeah, I think so.
And so for 2022 in the Beatle universe, are we going to get anything? I have my own theory.
Okay, what's your theory? You're a man with a theory.
I think my own theory is that there's going to be a fallow year in the Beatles, that we're not going to get an album box set, that we're not going to get anything. What we will get is we'll get the second coming of Get Back. So I think we will see some kind of physical release of the Get Back film, and we're gonna see that. So, you know, probably by the length of time, it'll be like a triple Blu-ray type thing. I mean, Beatle fans love their physical product. I think they're leaving money on the table if they don't put out a Get Back box set. You know, you can't do any kind of searchable stuff on your streamers, a Blu-ray where you can dial up an individual day, date, song, all the rest. I think they have gotten an extraordinary amount of exposure from people who wouldn't normally watch the Beatles or be involved with the Beatles, and a physical product, the fans will buy it. People will buy it as a present for somebody who was talking about it once, even, you know, it'll just give it a bit more legs. Whether or not that will have any extras on it, I think Peter Jackson has said in interviews there's a couple of extra performances knocking around.
I think, yes. I mean, he said, you know, one after 909. So we know that there are things that he has that he took a decision to keep out just for a kind of narrative point of view. So I think, you know, we'll probably get some extras. I don't think we're going to get a 22 disc, 57R. Director's cut, but I do think there will be some additional stuff. I think it's ironic that, you know, for all the work that Apple has put in since, you know, Sgt. Pepper, the White Album, Abbey Road, and that very careful kind of building of publicity and curating the legacy, that it's the project that they weren't directly involved in terms of
there's a lesson there,
the marketing.
Isn't there?
I think there is a lesson there.
100%.
I know I'm just circling back around to saying they let themselves down with the Let It Be box, but it is, it's kind of, you know, and I know they kind of commissioned Jackson to do this, but I think they just, they miscalculated. They didn't read the room, I think, there.
Well, I don't think there will be any audio with any physical Get Back movie release. I think that's, it seems that Apple, the music releasing arm and the Get Back movie people, there is no connection. I don't think we're going to get a rooftop gig on CD.
I was very hopeful that we would when I saw that, you know, inverted commas, missing fifth disc. But I'm come around to that view, that I think we're probably never going to see that in our lifetime.
Are we going to see Let It Be? The original Let It Be film?
Yeah, I think it's very... I think it's just really disappointing, again, that film is at risk of being airbrushed out of history. You know, one of the casualties, not through any fault of Peter Jackson's, but one of the casualties of this has been Michael Lindsay-Hogg. You know, generally speaking, people are saying very negative things about the way he comes across in the Get Back movie, and his original cut has been so wildly superseded that it's at risk of just disappearing. So I don't know whether there's any appetite in Apple to release the original.
But I think it is the time to put it out as the fourth disc in a Get Back movie box set, because it has generated so good vibes. The lesson has been learned. This is January 69. It wasn't as bad as we said. We can all look at Let It Be now.
Let It Be done.
Oh, yeah. They edited that crazy. That doesn't matter. Get Back is now the default text, I would say.
Yeah, I think so. Well, maybe Let It Be is the bonus material.
That could be. So out of 10, the Beatles for 2021?
I think 10.
I think 10 out of 10, even though the Let It Be box is a disappointment. Yeah. But Get Back, to actually have the band back in the public eye, back in front of people who wouldn't normally listen to the Beatles, to have them setting the agenda, to have them in the zeitgeist, that's exciting. That's fun. And Let It Be, the box did get to number 2. So what do
I
know?
Well, I think of it as a number 2. I do. So, yeah. I'm giving it 10 out of 10 for Get Back. And I think I'm giving the disappointment box 1.5 out of 10.
Okay. Normally, at this point, I've asked you before, what was your favorite non-Beatles related music or gig, if there were any gigs of 2021?
There have been no gigs. I've not been at a single gig since the Peter Green tribute gig in whenever that was, last decade. God.
Yeah, March 2020, yeah.
What's my favorite album of 2021 that is not related to the Beatles? Well, that would be Chemtrails Over the Country Club by Lana Del Rey.
Really? I did not know that you were a Lana Del Rey fan.
There you go.
My gosh. We need to talk about things that aren't Beatles more.
We do. You're saying new music, you know, new music. I mean, I've got lots.
Well, yeah, I guess new music. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, that's Lauren. The Lauren Nyro box was very good. If you're a fan, that's just, I had forgotten just how good those first lot of albums are, and they are spectacularly remastered. But in terms of new music, I think the Lana Del Rey album is very good.
Okay, that's fair enough.
What about you? I suppose it's all Olivia Rodriguez and
Olivia Rodriguez,
Taylor Swift, and
Taylor Swift is fine as well.
Dua Lipa,
Duolingo, all that stuff. The albums that I really enjoyed, and they're from the early part of the year, was Weezer put out two albums that they were kind of yin and yang albums, and the first one, OK Human, is this kind of Harry Nilsson orchestral jaunty pop, which I thought was very funny and charming. And then they put out a second album that was a holdback from last year called Van Weezer, which is kind of a metal pop album with kind of shades of Fountains of Wayne. And I think taken together, I really enjoyed both those. I certainly listened to them a lot. And in terms of reissues, I've really, of course, King Crimson, if anything, these annual editions chart my obsession of evolving into King Crimson, where I'm now buying 21 CD box sets and waiting for Robert Fripp's 2022 reissue of Exposures with 28 CDs.
You've never heard Exposure.
I've heard Exposure, but I'm not really into, I've heard Exposure itself, but the League of Gentlemen stuff and the Fripper Chronic stuff, I don't really have any of that.
That's where I came in.
But I want to give a thumbs up to Bob Mould, who put out a load of reissued a lot of stuff at the end of 2020 and into this year. And I have a box of his early solo albums and Sugar albums, which were albums I loved at the time. But that's been a fantastic thing to listen to. So, and gig wise, I only managed 3 gigs once things opened up, and now things are kind of closing down again. So Richard Thompson was probably my favorite gig of the year. But I only saw Richard Thompson, Something Happens and The Stunning, and two of those bands are very Irish bands, you know.
Light a Big Fountainhead.
What was your favorite thing, Ado? Hey, everybody, look who's joining us
Ado
now on the podcast. It's the annual appearance, although he did sneak into the Get Back episode, is producer, my cousin Adrian. Hello, Ado. Happy Christmas. It's Christmas Day. I was just saying to Stephen that we're in our house by the fire.
You're not very festive, Ado.
Well, I know, but happy Christmas to you too as well. And it is canon that we all live together in our... I can't remember if it was head to toe in the double bed and one single bed. I can't remember. I must listen back to that.
How could I forget?
I hope so. As long as the But they're all in a line. Anyway, yes, the main thing. Sorry, yes. I should have said that.
Sorry, I was. I had the glass against the door listening in there. I didn't want to interrupt. My favorite things of the year, well, for album-wise, there was some really good stuff from, which I was very good, War on Drugs. Their new album is pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
I really like that. I don't hear any more. The Killers, just like Weezer, had a succession of albums coming out all over the place. Not bad. Pretty good stuff as well. I like the Weezer stuff too. Tyler, the Creator, a good album. Playboi Carti, no relation, but I think we all know who the real Playboi is here.
Are you annoyed? Like annoyed with the name Playboi Carti? I know I am.
I am. I've been called that for years, and I never made a penny off it. I don't understand it. But that was even though that was a good album. Robert Plant and Alison Krauss's album is pretty good. But I think the best album for me was a kind of a reissue remaster, which was Heartworm by Whipping Boy, which I thought was really good. The vinyl version of that is fantastic. It's B-sides and rarities and that kind of stuff. It was a remastered album by somebody, well, Dublin Vinyl, or you can buy it direct from Dublin Vinyl. But
it was Pete Fafides, the journalist Pete Fafides runs a boutique label called Needle Mythology, and he put out Whipping Boy's Heartworm and got an awful lot of kudos for reintroducing people to this. It's an Irish album from the 90s that kind of has slipped under the radar. And so he's working on a reissue of the Neil and Tim Finn album, Finn, which is something I'm looking on. That's been put on hold because of the pandemic, which is something I want to get hold of next year. But yeah, he's done all of that. I was following his Twitter feed because of Brexit, he can't get Whipping Boy albums from Britain into Ireland in time for Christmas. There
don't
you go.
Know
it's
it.
The gift that keeps on giving.
I've bought three of them already.
They didn't materialize in time for today, Christmas Day. That's
no, it isn't. But I do think Jason and I, we have lives. We do stuff, Stephen,
You do stuff without me. I know stuff without me.
But we don't like to brag, but there is a lot of great Irish artists this year come out of, because I know we talk about the Beatles quite a lot. But there's some great Irish bands as well. Villagers had a new album out, Techno Rourke had a new album out. So a lot of girls are Finn Hálar, which are pretty good too.
Chyla.
Yes, Denise Chyla is great. Yes, there's a really good...
Denise Chyla is fantastic.
And, of course, that excellent Van Morrison latest record project, Volume 1. That.
It has... Why are you on Facebook? That is an actual song title from Van Morrison's... I think his next album is going to be called Will This Do? And the one after that is, that's the contract over with.
Yeah.
I think that's what's coming down the track.
He has form. He has form.
Yeah, not great. I think there's some good albums this year. Some good stuff. Idols have a good album out this year as well, kind of different from the previous ones. And now
you're listening to too many albums. You're putting us to shame.
And it's from this century as well. I'm really putting you to shame.
I don't like this at all. I don't like where this is going.
Yeah, we had this exchange on Twitter just because I mentioned the Inhalers.
The Inhalers, yeah. Very good.
Yeah, number one album in there.
Speaking of exchanges online, we did ask the good people of Twitter land and Facebookertonian to get in touch with our regular roundup of questions. Some good ones. Some good ones here. I think Paul is not dead. I'm just going to get that out of the way. I'll answer that question. Paul's not dead, so please stop asking. Is Paul dead? I don't think he is. But I'll get my Tombola machine out here, and I will pick questions at random from the Tombola, and you can take them at your leisure, gentlemen. So I will go to the Twitter Tombola first. I think you kind of just talked about this, really. So Phil Kinderman, do you think there would be a Get Back box set in 2022? But I think you just kind of covered that anyway. So
we did just cover that.
Yeah, I think there will be something on Blu-ray.
Okay. Fanboy asks, what's the best Beatles show this year, McCartney 321 or Peter Jackson's Get Back Doc?
Peter Jackson's Get Back Doc. I think.
Yeah. It Get Back is one for the ages. On any other year, 3-2-1 would have been an amusing diversion, but it's kind of been overshadowed. I think it's a good thing for newbies to go back and watch if they want for people who haven't seen the Beatles before, but Get Back by Country Mile, obviously.
Yeah,
3-2-1 didn't do it for me, to be honest with you. Didn't do it for me. Even though there's a good documentary out there about Neil Diamond, who did, you know, he did a similar kind of thing in 2006, 2007, 2008 or something like that, where he worked with your man, but his name's Rick Rubin. There's a good document about that, you know, when he, you know, kind of relaunched his career.
I'm guessing Rick Rubin put on trousers for Neil Diamond.
He probably did. And funny, there, you know, do you see that documentary, the Beastie Boys documentary on Apple, the kind of live show?
No, thing. Actually, I would like to.
Rick Rubin has mentioned that quite a lot, and it's good. It's good. It's very long, but it's quite good though. Anyway, back to this. John Parkin asks, which album would you like to see given the deluxe box set treatment next, group or solo?
Hi, John, friend of the show. Well, we kind of have touched upon this. We actually, you know, I think a Material World box set would be great. Yeah, no problem with that. Or something to do with George's 74. I mean, George's stuff, the Dark Horse, the pre-Dark Horse George stuff, there's loads of stuff in the vaults that and a bit of a remix and a polish and some live stuff and all the rest would be brilliant.
Yeah, I think Living in the Material World, that's probably the solo one I would like to see get the box set treatment. And Beatles, I think I would like to hear the demixed Star Club tapes. I think that's probably, we said maybe there's going to be a fallow year, you know, not much coming out from officially from Apple this year or next year. But I think the Star Clubs, that would be nice to have that given that treatment.
Okay. Stephen Hope again on Twitter asks, which Beatles albums have the best guitar tones? It's a bit in the weeds, all right.
Well, I think it's hard to get past Abbey Road just because of the leap forward in the kind of recording technology. So for me, that would be the guitar album.
It is a very guitar-y album. It's a very, you know, we've said this before, Abbey Road kind of has that 70s solid state recording studio sound, you know, so you can kind of, you know, sounds of Abbey Road are kind of closer to something like Rumours than, you know, the White Album, even though it sounds closer to the 60s stuff. I personally, in terms of general clatter, I think I'd like the White Album, actually, to be honest.
Another one from Twitter, Caitlin, a very seasonal question here. Why do people think that Wonderful Christmas Time is a bad song?
Jason doesn't think it's a bad song.
How long do you want me to do?
There's our apologist now.
I did
a minute and a half. You've got a minute and a half.
I've defended this to Robin Hitchcock. I think I said something about the Clive James line. It's you know, Paul makes the unexpected seem obvious, and that's what I like about Wonderful Christmas Time. I was asked onto another podcast last year. I did a very brief thing in favor of Wonderful Christmas Time. I'll put a link up to it. The name of the podcast escapes me at the minute. It's an Irish podcast, but I think Wonderful Christmas Time is a great track. The backing track is a very unobviously Christmas tune, and it's yet a song that just kind of filters down into your DNA like classic McCartney, and I think it's good fun. And Harry Styles does a fantastic version of it.
Harry Styles? Well, he did do a good version of the Peter Gabriel song, Sledgehammer. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
I heard that.
Harry Styles is great. And he's just finished a tour with Jenny Lewis. Like, he chose Jenny Lewis as his support. Harry Styles. And he's a massive fan of Wings' Back to the Egg. So when the Back to the Egg reissue happens, Paul's line to the press, mark my words, will be, Harry Styles told me it was a good album and one of his favorites, and I had another think and I thought it's quite good. That's what he will say, and that's how he will say it.
Is Paul getting Ringo to do the press, or
he's getting
Dana Carvey will be doing the press anyway.
A couple more. Lester Nidge asks, who was the greatest songwriter of the 60s? You can only choose one individual, but not a partnership.
Well, first of all, it's Lester Nige, because he's Nigel and he's from Leicester. So okay. I'm going to say,
We call him Nige in Dublin.
Nige is a very Irish name.
Yeah, Nige is what a Dublin thing, yeah.
All right, Nige. sorry, who's the best solo songwriter?
Hang on, let me just put that again. Who's the greatest songwriter of the 60s? And you can only choose one individual, not a partnership.
Oh, right. Okay.
Can I predict? Jason's going to say, Ray Davis.
I don't know. Like the big solo songwriters, there's Ray, there's Pete Townsend, I suppose, is the other one. Ray is fantastic, you know. Obviously, due to recent events, Mike Nesmith comes to mind as a solo songwriter in the 60s, because he kind of wrote a phenomenal run of tracks.
And then there's that other guy that did some stuff in the 60s, that solo songwriter.
Oh, yes, Bob Dylan.
Bob Dylan, that's
of course.
Of course.
Bob Dylan. I think I would put Bob above Ray. Listen, Ray Davies is fantastic and amazing. I think as I get older, I sometimes find some of Ray's stuff, what's the word? I don't know, sometimes he can be a bit uncharitable, you know?
As the older I get, the more I like that aspect of what he does.
I don't know if that is the word.
Bob Dylan. I'm going with Bob Dylan.
Are you only saying Bob Dylan because of Jason's hair, or your?
Yeah, it's great hair. It's great.
My hair is 66 Dylan at the minute. It's 82 Kevin Rowland.
It's very blonde on blonde. Yeah.
I have the light behind me.
I have some questions from Facebook, which were written out by, I think, a GP. I'm not really sure. So number one, what is the five worst Beatles songs?
The five worst Beatles songs. I'm trying to find.
I don't know. I've already given out a lot this year about what goes on. But there was an article that came out this week from the NME where they've listed every Beatles song in order of greatness. And I'm just pulling it up here in the background. Their bottom five songs, their worst Beatles song ever is Wild Honey Pie, then Dig It, then You Know My Name, Look Up the Number, then Why Don't We Do It in the Road, and then Revolution 9. They're their five worst Beatles songs, and they are wrong on every single count. It's such an annoying list. I was punching my iPad. Like Wild Honey Pie has an amazing cover from Pixies, which is well worth checking out. You Know My Name, Look Up the Number. Two fools could talk about that song for an hour. No problem. That's a great track. And Revolution 9 is, you know, I will defend it till my dying day. It's, you know, it's pop avant-garde, you know, it's contributed so much. So my own personal worst, I don't know. I don't like What Goes On. I don't like, I don't know. They're all great though, really, aren't they? What are your worsts, Stephen?
I scribbled down my list. In the time that it's taken you to do all that, I've got my definitive list of
go on.
In no particular order, Babies in Black.
I know you hate that, Jess.
I hate that song. Little Child from With the Beatles.
Yeah. Okay, that's not a good song.
Hold Me Tight from With the Beatles.
Yeah, it's got energy. Go on.
Yes, It Is, which I know this is controversial, but I know people love that song, but I just, that's the one of the worst. Yes, It Is. Terrible song. still there in the number one position is Maxwell Silverhammer.
Oh, man. You know, one of the questions that's been bouncing around recently is what song should Paul play in a concert that he hasn't played in a concert? And I think number one with a bullet is Maxwell Silverhammer, that even the greatest Maxwell Silverhammer hater, if Paul kicked off Maxwell Silverhammer and if somebody brought on an anvil and played it, would bring the house down and you would have to love it. And Maxwell's, I think, is getting a second lease of life after Get Back. People see it's a, like, we all love Mal Evans. It's a great song.
What I don't like about it is the instrumentation. I think the use of the synthesizer on that song is just so heavy-handed, and it's that aspect of it that I don't like. I think it's a fun lyric. I think it's a dark lyric. I'll get all of those things. I just think we've talked about this before, but it's in the wrong place on the album. It's first appearance, and it's just you think of how the synthesizer is used elsewhere on that album. Notably on Here Comes the Sun. And it's just really clunky and heavy-handed. So,
okay.
Sorry.
There you go. I'm not sure where the NME put Maxwell's on its list, but anyway, I'm quite surprised with the, go check it out, people. It's a crazy list.
What is the best cover of a Beatles song?
Alice in Christ, I Will. That's my go-to cover. Thank you.
The best cover of a Beatles song. Yeah, who does that really heavy version of It's All Too Much?
Steve Hillage.
Slipped my mind.
Steve Hillage.
Yeah, that's wow. That's great.
That's this
that
is your
mind.
This is your prog. You're really getting into Steve Hillage. That is the last. Oh, Steve Hillage. Yeah, it's good.
I don't know why that one's came to mind. Of course, I thought you were going to say U2's Helter Skelter, Stephen, but obviously you're saying that's your number two.
That is a number two.
What about my friends? No, that's not yours, Stephen.
No.
Changes every year, maybe next year. What is the next Paul archive set that will be released, do you think?
We think well, it's going to be London Town and Back to the Egg, but I think he's going to go with Broad Street. I have this horrible feeling, and then we'll have to do an episode on Broad Street, and
we will see Broad Street coming out. I think everything's going to come out eventually. Yeah,
that's the episode where I will yield the chair to Edo for Broad Street.
Oh, I note that day. I have a thing that day. One question that you two were sent me earlier on, which we're very excited about, but I don't see the validity in this. Who would you cast in a Beatles Muppet movie?
That's a fantastic question.
But it's only the voices because they look like Muppets, so it's just voices more so, surely.
No. This is a very good question. This is from David Chandler. Hi, Dave, big friend of the show.
Hi, Dave.
This is
Dave,
the best.
Dogface boy, everyone. Look, obviously, Gonzo is Ringo, right? That's just a given, isn't it?
Well, you see, Fozzie Bear.
Fozzie is Ringo?
Yeah.
Mm.
You not think?
Okay, well.
But I can see Gonzo, the kind of hangdog. Yeah, okay, Gonzo for Ringo.
Okay, Gonzo is Ringo. That's one. Okay, who's next? I have my theory about who do you think Paul is?
Fozzie Bear. I think everybody's Fozzie Bear.
Kermit is the interfering busybody who's trying to get everything to happen.
Or no, Sam the Eagle is Paul McCartney. Very Sam the Eagle.
No, I think it's Fozzie Bear, this relentlessly upbeat, trying to think he's funny. You know, hey, you know, come on, guys, we've got to pull ourselves together. I think Fozzie Bear.
I know, Fozzie Bear is funny. Paul McCartney. That's Fozzie Bear. Hey. Thumbs up the whole time. No.
I think Fozzie's a good call. I can see what you mean. Waka waka. He wants to entertain. He's the born entertainer. He's willing to go on at the drop of a hat. One of the Paul videos that came out this year was there was a back behind the scenes video to that Beck Find My Way video. And once again, Paul sits down and plays the piano for everyone when nobody asks, just to be nice. And it's quite funny and charming. So that's Paul. Is Fozzie. So we're left with John and George. Okay,
well,
so
George has got to be Floyd Pepper from the band with the kind of, you know, the guitar, the mustache, the kind of hippie, you know, thing.
Oh, the blue guy. Yeah, who wears
the
hat.
Yeah, with the kind of orange mustache and sideburn and so.
Okay.
Or Dr. Teeth. No, it's Dr. Teeth. The Mayhem.
Dr. Teeth is based on Dr. John.
Yeah, but Dr. Teeth would have to be Billy Preston.
Yeah.
Okay, true. Fine. So that leaves John. Okay. Well, John isn't Kermit. John is.
Well, see, I was thinking John is either. I was thinking John is either Kermit, or
yeah.
I was thinking Sam the Eagle.
It could be Sam the Eagle. We're kind of looking for someone who's.
Well, could you not swap out Animal for Ringo, even though he's not really that kind of drummer, but he is a drummer.
Well, I think Animal has lineage to Keith Moon, so you can't really use Animal. I could see Sam the Eagle for Lennon. Who else is? This is tricky.
Well, the other thing is that we're kind of going to recast the other characters. So, say, Dr. Teeth as Billy Preston. Maybe Sam the Eagle could be George Martin.
George Martin. Yes, now you're talking. So we're still left with a John void. We might have to.
Oh, there's a guy.
There's a guy
in the Electric Mayhem. Who's not Dr. Teeth, who looks a bit like John Lennon, who's got the little John Lennon glasses. I can't think of his name now.
Zoot? The guy Zoot?
Zoot is who I'm thinking of, the saxophone player.
Yeah,
he's a bit John Lennon-y, isn't he?
He kind of looks, but yeah, you could pass for John Lennon in the dark alley. Yeah, but I think Sam they got others. Scooter, who is the backstage assistant, that would have to be Mal.
That's a good shout.
Yes, Scooter is Mal. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
We're gonna have to put Kermit in as and Edo, who do you think, you know, would play Waldorf and Statler?
That's good.
Hands up for us.
We're writing ourselves in. Who would be the sarcastic people sitting in the balcony making comments about the people on the stage? You know, that was it's.
Your theories are a lock, and with Jason's hair the way it is at the moment, you know, very Muppet-esque as well. So it'd be fun. It'd work. Any more questions here?
I don't think we're going to top the Beatles as Muppets. I think that's exactly the type of highbrow discursive topic we were looking for.
I have a question.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
How much longer?
I have a question. Well, it's more of a kind of a cure, really. So when we first started talking about this 4 years ago, I think, even before we recorded anything, one of the questions I had was, you know, it'd be great to do an episode on is Beatles movies all across the spectrum. And I said, I've got to do that. I'd love to do that episode. It's fantastic. We've never done it. So is this the year that's going to happen to do a Beatles movies episode?
Oh, I see. You're asking us on air now.
I'll do my own episode. I don't care.
Well, we did do Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Doesn't get more Beatles.
Yeah, that's
than
a great
that.
Movie. And we did Ringo's movies. So, you know, we have done our movies. We promise. We will do movies in 2022. We are starting to look at the list for 2022, and there's some suggestions coming in. The amount of people who want a Mal Evans episode is very exciting.
We're not doing your episode you want to do, which is Paul McCartney's Shoes. We're not doing the Paul McCartney Shoes episode.
Well, do you know, guys, many episodes we've done in 2021?
How many? Cave Aid.
We've done 45 episodes this year. 45. Get your head around that. So...
Oddly enough, one of my highlights for the year this year, it's in this tiny room, is my extraordinary delight and my pride for you two of what you achieved this year. Because when we were down in the podcast mines 4 years ago, you know, tunneling away, we're talking about, you know, the longevity of podcasts and, you know, how to, you know, to stick with and to build the communities and niche is good and all that kind of stuff. So coming into, you know, season five, it's the, you know, we've had the biggest kind of communities of all. We've had a record number of downloads and interactions, and it's been amazing. And it's a credit to both you for the amount of work and research put into it. It's incredible. So to see it at season five, like, you, where would you get it? It's really exploded in the last 6 months, which is fantastic. And it's amazing that there, who knew that you could talk for 45 hours a year about the Beatles, like, apparently again.
Well, if we're doing the Christmas sincerity bit, because it's now late on Christmas Day, we're all quite merry and drunk and all the rest. But obviously, thanks to yourself, Ado, thanks for getting us to see Get Back, which was great fun. Thank you, Stephen, for your judicious notes. I think there was a question about how do you prepare, and I think both of us prepare in rather radically different ways.
We do. We do. I've said it before. I bring the facts, but you bring the fun.
That's debatable as well. But it's been a remarkable year, and particularly, you know, we've noticed the explosion globally in Beatle interest in the last couple of weeks, and that's kind of had a knock-on effect for us, and that's been a lot of fun to see lots of new followers, lots of people getting involved, and thanks to everyone out there for listening, and thanks to our Acast Plus subscribers who are getting loads of new episodes. You should treat yourselves for Christmas, folks. If any money fell out of a Christmas card today, why not join the Acast Plus tier? That's what it's all about, right, Ado?
Yeah, well, and just on that, a very quick to say thank you to Acast and to Hannah and her team in Acast for being very supportive of us this year in particular. You know, we couldn't do it without them either, so thanks to them.
Yeah, well, I mean, the same thing. I say the absolute highlight for me this year has been the whole kind of in the last few weeks, the Get Back episode and getting to see the documentary, and that kind of really the number of people that downloaded that episode and have been in touch and to kind of be part of that. But that was kind of basically down to yourself you know, selling that up on Disney Plus. And so, yeah,
this is
the point where we can announce we're just going to not do any more episodes ever again. And we've each made $1 million. And
I think, yeah, we should thank Disney Plus because that's a good opportunity. I think we can, enough time has passed that the kind of the realization that we were going to get to watch the entire show. I think we thought we were just going to get a preview, and the actual fact that we got to watch the entire thing beforehand was just such an exciting kind of thrill, just to kind of cram all those episodes back to back. It was just a great thing, you know.
Somebody did ask the question, how did you watch it? How did the three of you watch it? Did you all watch it in the same room, or did you watch it simultaneously, or were you texting each other?
We all live together. I mean, we've answered this.
We do live together, yeah. So we all watched it on our big happy telly. No, I ended up watching it. The real me was moving house, so I ended up watching it on an iPad while I was essentially homeless and not minding my children. That's what I was doing.
The way Peter Jackson intended to be.
That's, I think, what it was meant to do. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And the live show was great as well. I mean, that was really. It was quite an emotional thing because that was a gig that you went to.
That was a gig.
There you go. That's a gig. That's a
we
gig.
Gigged. We gigged.
That's gig. True. We did a gig. That is, yeah. That is quite
and
true.
And that was pretty good. I mean, the amount of jocks and bras thrown was, I just can't get my head around it.
It was embarrassing and people asking for photographs. And
yes. And we should thank Stephen and the Dublin Beatles Festival because he kind of teed that up as well because that's all part of the community. I think globally the Beatles community is a very pleasant one to hang around.
It is. I mean, thank heavens for the pandemic and that elevated us to the main stage in the Dublin Beatles Festival because they couldn't get anybody else. There was, you know, we'll take it.
We'll take it. Yes, absolutely. So I think all that's left, guys, is just to, you know, this is the end of season 5. I think we're going to go fallow for a few weeks, but we're all agreed there's going to be a season 6, right? Oh my God, deathly silence.
Well, I said before, like the nine seasons and they're out. That's it, done.
Not, definitely, there will not be a 10th season.
No.
You heard it here first. But yes, well,
that's
right.
I think during the course of 2021, the other thing I did was line up at least 3 possible replacements for Jason.
That is true. That so is said, not a joke.
When we split inevitably over the biscuit related fallout argument, I've got 3. Just don't worry, Edo. I've got 3 potential replacements. Each one, quite frankly, an improvement. You know,
heaven forbid those 3 should just form their own podcast. But we'll leave that to the
don't
to the,
say
to the
that.
Gods.
Don't Sorry. Say that.
Good idea. Yeah, we will be. This is the end of season 5. There are 45th and final episode of the year. If you haven't listened to all 45, that means you need to subscribe to Acast. But we will be. In the words of a great man, we're going away to dream it all up again, but we'll be back probably around Patrick's Day with season 6, and it'll be full of more nonsense, and we might do a movie episode, Edo, if we have to. Jesus.
Happy Christmas.
Well, I tell you what, you and Edo go and finish off the mince pies, and I'll get working on the notes for season 6.
If you wouldn't mind, and just send them to the usual place, Stephen, yeah. That'd be great. I'm going to go hibernate and wake me up around the start of the spring solstice, and we'll get season 6 on the road. But yeah, watch this space. I guess it's time to sign off, isn't it?
Yes.
We're available in all the usual places. www.nothingisrealpod.com is the website, and that's a portal to all our fun stuff. We'll be updating that across the new year. That was a thing that didn't exist a year ago. Also, Acast Plus is where we have all our bonus episodes. We've put up episodes recently on the Beatles houses and the 1975 compilations, and there's lots of fun stuff up there. The whole parallel season 4.5 that's been going on this year is up on Acast Plus. We're on Twitter at Beatles Pod. We've the Nothing Is Real Facebook group, which, by the way, before we go, can I just issue an apology to the Nothing Is Real Facebook group for anything I've ever said about Rubber Soul that has hurt anybody's feelings at any point in time. That's my Christmas gift to you. I've learned my lesson. It's now my favoriteest album of all time. It's even better than Wings at the Speed of Sound. And but you can discuss other such things on the Nothing Is Real Facebook group. Maybe I'll log into it someday. Instagram, we want to thank William Hinson. It's been great for running our Instagram all year. William Hinson is a great musician. He's got great music. He did a great cover this year of Eleanor Rigby, but he's got his own music, and you should check him out on Spotify or wherever you like to stream your music. And I might do a Christmas TikTok, which will be our second or third TikTok of the year. You know, it's all the usual stuff. But yeah, it's just Happy Christmas, everybody, right?
Happy Christmas, and best wishes for 2022.
2022. We'll see you. You won't feel it. You'll hear from us again in a few weeks' time. But I'm Jason Carty.
I'm Stephen Cockcroft.
I'm Adrian Carty. Well, I never get to do this.
What? What?
So excited.
Shut the door. And this has been Nothing Is Real. Thanks for listening, and a happy Christmas and a happy new year. Bye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening to Nothing Is Real. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. And if you did, why not become a member? You'll get access to ad-free content, bonus episodes, and so much more. Follow the link in the show notes, sign up on Acast Plus, or visit our website, nothingisrealpod.com.